Just because you wrestle alligators for a living doesn't mean you should have the skin of one. Say goodbye to dry and cracked skin with Old Spice Super Hydration Body Wash with vitamin B3. Made for 24/7 renewing moisturization with daily use. With scents of vanilla and shea, people will think you've taken up candle making as one of your hobbies. And there is nothing wrong with that. Old Spice Super Hydration Body Wash. Shop Old Spice now.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
And the second hour has arrived, and I apologize for letting go of our call with Ron a minute ago, who was in the assisted living center. We simply ran out of time, but Ron, we will continue to think of you, and hopefully we can talk again very, very soon. Let's get back to the calls we go, and Andrew is in North Carolina. Hello, Andrew.
Paul, you look like you were just having way too much fun in Tampa.
Rarely have I ever done a day's work in 86 degrees and with my feet up on the desk. It was pretty cool.
Well, maybe the greatest compliment I could ever pay you is that you ask all of the coaches and analysts, you ask them exactly the question that I would want to ask. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you for saying that.
Tennessee fans are livid that they get a number three seed. So if you are Rick Barnes today, what are you telling your players at practice as far as motivation? Because I think this is a team that's final four material, and I'll hang up and enjoy your show.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't think you overdo it. I think you you let them know that they're the SEC champion, and obviously some people are not that impressed, and we only have one way to try to answer the critics, and that's on the court. You can't obsess over it. When you're Texas A&M, you're in a completely different spot. You're in the NIT. You know that virtually nobody cares, and you're really down to your last emotional outburst. But Tennessee can't get hung up on emotion. They know they have a good enough team to get to the Final Four. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Ernie is in Baton Rouge. You are on the air. Hello, Ernie.
Well, hi, Mr. Feinbaum. I'm a first-time caller and a long-time listener.
Thank you.
And you and your crew do a great job. I'd like to give you, as far as some insight from an average LSU fan. I've been an LSU fan ever since I was born, and I'm 70 years old now. When the wiretap first broke on Mr. Wade, all of us heard it, and we kind of went, man, and we all thought, you know, that was the end. But then in the sports shows around Baton Rouge, a year later, Mr. Vitale was on, and you know, he was saying, well, the allegations are going to drop any day, and they never dropped. And then about a year ago, he was on another sports talk show and repeated the same thing. And, of course, it didn't come until last week. And I'm not making excuses for anybody. I'm embarrassed as far as that goes. But when we heard the allegations about paying money to someone's as far as fiance in order to keep her mouth shut, and then offering an international player $300,000 in order to come to play basketball for LSU, I think that's what broke a lot of the fans. Now, I'm not in the loop to where that I know that if anybody in the inner workings of LSU knew about this, but I can tell you one thing: it wasn't the buyout that kept them from firing him, you know, like last year, because we just paid at least a $10 million buyout in order to get rid of Coach O and his staff.
Closer to $20 million.
Okay, sir. I just wanted to give everybody a perspective on how average LSU fan is now dealing with it.
Sure.
And how embarrassing it is.
Well, that's important to hear because I will tell you that when the allegations first came out, we had a lot of very harsh things to say here. And we got a lot of blowback, not only from LSU fans, but from the LSU media. And that continued to a point where I determined it was just not really, really even worth talking about any longer. If LSU wanted to keep Will Wade, that was their problem. But we had already made our feelings here pretty well known. And so it's comforting from a moralistic standpoint to hear you say what you do, because I have a hard time believing LSU fans want anything to do with someone that is alleged to have done the things that he did.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. I just wanted to let everybody know how one little longtime LSU fan felt and how maybe the information was just not forthcoming, whoever's fault that was. But I think most of the LSU fans like Will Wade, but I think that they're glad that he's gone.
Well, he did a very good job. He won games. He brought in great players. So I can understand why the fans liked him. Hey, thank you very much for the call. How about David in Mississippi? Hello, David.
Hey, good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon.
I, too, am a longtime listener, first-time caller, and I, too, am a diehard LSU fan, but I got a different question. As an LSU fan, we have been expecting the hammer to fall for years now, and I don't even call them allegations because, to me, they're just infractions. You think they did it. We think he did it. He's guilty as charged for the most part, but the question is, what does LSU do now? What do we do now? I mean, Scott.
Well, here's what you do.
You
have
time.
To fight. You have to battle this case with lawyers. You answer the charges. You fight what you think you can fight. You negotiate where there is some wiggle room, and you try to come up with the best accommodation possible. LSU's not in a good spot here to say, well, we fired Will Wade the moment we heard the allegations. That's clearly not true. They stuck with him down to the final day.
Yeah.
So they're not going to get any credit for getting rid of him last week after the fact. And all they can do now is hope because the allegations about the culture down there and the institutional control, to me, are far more serious than anything Will Wade did.
Oh, I agree. It's like it's out of control. And once again, I go back, you know, we've been waiting on this for 4 years. But what about the coaching side of it now? You know, we're about hiring the big name person and getting that big hire. Do you hire somebody or you convince somebody to come stick with us the next 3 or 4 years while we suffer the consequences? And we'll reward you and come out the other side? Or do you got to get somebody, just a nobody, if you will, to come in here for 3 or 4 years and then get that big hire? I mean, who's going to want to take
it's a good question because you can't get your conventional up and coming coach because you could get lost in the shuffle. So you either take someone who has a personal investment in wanting to be there, or you get – let's be honest, somebody who's been fired somewhere else, who may be a big name, but has nothing to lose because, you know, you're not going to go get Brian Kelly from Notre Dame. I mean, I realize he's a football coach, but
no, and I don't think we're going to get, like, you know, the big names like Drew from Baylor and all these guys.
Not going there.
Why would they want to come now and sit here for 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, because in basketball, if you can't compete in the NCAA tournament, you're worthless.
Yeah, that's why we play.
Yeah, especially in an era where you have – and it's changing by the day, but, you know, there's still a lot of players that are going someplace for 1 year, and you're not going to LSU if you're out of the tournament.
Yeah, see, we're already losing guys. You know, we've already had couple of recruits that we signed that's dropping out. You know, there's going to be some more of them, and who's going to want to come knowing, you know, this dark cloud hanging there and everything?
So it's a very big problem. You're absolutely right. Hey, thank you for the call. Great to hear from you. And one of those guys who was defending Will Wade to the end is Louisiana Dan. You there?
Hey.
Yeah, I remember all the times you were defending Will Wade. You still defending him?
Paul, the last time I called you, what did I tell you?
Well, Dan, I honestly can't remember. It's been so long.
It was a couple of weeks ago. As soon as I heard the allegations went down, I called you and said, we can fire Wade today, right?
Yeah, well, you must have called another show. I don't remember that one. John Feinstein will join us next, the longtime columnist and best-selling author on The Madness of March.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Yeah, we welcome all of you back. Let's continue with more phone calls here. And Tom is up next in Kentucky. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Paul. It's been a while since I called you, Paul. I'm a big college basketball fan growing up here in southeastern Kentucky, big Wildcats fan, but I'm real excited about the SEC, their chances this year in the tournament. I thought we really got a good shot with Arkansas, Tennessee, Kentucky, possibly making it to the Sweet 16 and further. Just real excited about how competitive the SEC has become in men's college basketball. I thought we got a pretty good draw on how many teams we got in the tournament, although I would have liked to see Florida in there. And I really think that that our chances are good this year. I like how competitive, just how exciting it's been for the SEC to how.
Well, thank you very, very much. The SEC ended up with 6 teams in the NCAA tournament. We are always excited when we can grab John Feinstein, the best-selling author, one of the best-selling sports authors of all time. He's written 45 books. Contributes to a number of publications, including the Washington Post. I'll get it right. John, welcome back to the program. It's great to have you as the NCAA tournament, I guess it's going on right now, but we'll really get started tomorrow. Good afternoon.
Paul, good afternoon. It's thank you for having me on again. You know, I always enjoy it. And by the way, years ago, I did actually write for the Wall Street Journal.
I didn't know. I know your career pretty well because I'm one of the few people still alive that knew John Feinstein before he was a billionaire author.
But oh, God, I wish.
I remember when you were just a lowly beat reporter.
And I remember when you were just a lowly beat reporter. That's how we met.
Yeah, it's true. You were in town doing a Maryland-Alabama game.
That's the first time we met, but I think the first time we talked was during the recruitment of Bobby Lee Hurt.
That is correct, yes.
Yeah.
A story I've tried 40 years to forget, but I bet
so
Wim Sanderson has too. So, John,
I
mean, there's 1,000 ways to go at this. So we were talking about, we had a clip a few minutes ago of Buzz Williams, who was near emotional breakdown over
right.
not getting in the tournament. I know that it's easy to say they belonged, but he made some really serious allegations about the way this committee does business. And I know you know a lot of these people. What is your thoughts on not the misses occasionally or the misseedings, but the overall job of the men's basketball committee?
Well, there's several points to be made here, I think, Paul. The first one is, years ago, there were former coaches on the committee because coaches became athletic directors, Vic Bubas, Dave Gavitt,
right.
My old friend from George Washington, Jack Cavance, Terry Holland. I mean, these were basketball guys, and they could guide the non-basketball guys on the committee. There are no basketball guys on the committee anymore because coaches don't become athletic directors anymore. Athletic directors, as you well know, are basically fundraisers. That's their primary job. And yet, the NCAA has not changed the rule. What it said, the rule says you've got to be a commissioner or an athletic director to serve on the committee. So you've got all these non-basketball people. Now, they're being guided by staffers and things like that, but they can't use an eye test. I'll give you an example. Les Robinson, another former coach who became an athletic director, was on the committee in 2000, and they were down to one spot for three teams. And one of the three teams was North Carolina. And one of the other guys on the committee, Jack Cavance, turned to Les, who had coached at NC State, and said, be honest, who's the best team here? And Les said, I hate to say it, but it's Carolina. They put Carolina in the field. They went to the Final Four. Those were basketball people. Now you have non-basketball people. And any claim that any of them make that, oh, this isn't political at all, just isn't true, Paul. I mean, for years, the U.S. Basketball Writers Association, I was a president once upon a time, has tried to say to the committee, hey, look, fellas, you keep telling us that there's no politics involved, that if your team is being discussed, you get up and leave the room as if everybody else doesn't know what you want. Let a reporter in. Let the president of the U.S. Basketball Writers, whomever it is that year, into the room to serve as a pool reporter to back up what you guys have been telling us for years. They won't do it. They won't even consider it. Well, what does that tell you, Paul? I mean, we talk about people being transparent. These are the least transparent people in the world other than the PGA Tour. That's another story.
Yeah, you might. I've always argued the same thing for the College Football Playoff Committee, and they
exactly.
And they won't do it. But again, a lot of the same mindset. Bill Hancock, who runs that, used to be part of the men's basketball committee, as you well know.
Well, he was the staff guy in charge of the men's basketball committee. And you know, Bill, there's no better guy in the world than Bill. But ultimately, he doesn't have the power to say, let's open this up. The people who have the power are the people on the committee. And they don't want to be transparent. I mean, I think the rule on the football committee, you would know this better than I would, is that the only person who speaks publicly is the chairman.
Correct.
I mean, that's like Augusta National. I mean, for crying out loud, is world peace at stake here? We're talking about a bunch of football teams, a bunch of basketball teams. And I criticize the committee every year. And Texas A&M was one of the things I criticized them for. They went to the final of their tournament, played in what may be the best conference in basketball. I don't care how many bids the Big Ten got, and they belonged. And they're mid-major teams who don't win their conference tournament have no chance to get in because they're not TV teams. The only one who might have had a chance this year was Iona because of Rick Pitino's presence, and they didn't get in. They set up the field. Excuse me. They set up the field for television, and the Big Ten is where are the Big Ten? Where is the Big Ten tournament televised? CBS.
Sure.
So would they rather have teams from the Big Ten, which has a big money contract with CBS, or teams from another conference that doesn't have a big money contract with CBS? I mean, it's very plain, Paul, and yet committee members, I argue with them about this all the time, and I keep saying, okay, fine. You say I've got it wrong. Prove it.
Well said. John Feinstein with us. John, one of the teams that got in at a very high seed, many have claimed that they were underseeded, and that's Tennessee, and I know you've been friends with Rick Barnes for many, many, many years. Your assessment of their seeding and really just of Tennessee overall under Rick Barnes?
Well, I mean, as you said, I first knew Rick when he was an assistant coach at George Mason in the 1980s. That's how far back we go. So you can say I'm biased if you want. But after Tennessee won the SEC tournament and beat Kentucky for the second time in a row on a neutral floor, They should have been moved to where Kentucky is as a number two, and Kentucky should have been moved to the three line. But when you play your conference championship game on Sunday, the committee, everybody on the committee is already headed for the airport, except for the chairman, who stays behind so the CBS people can say, oh, you did a great job again, and not answer questions. But when Iowa beats Purdue in the Big Ten tournament, that didn't change Iowa being a five, Purdue being a three. I think they probably both should have been fours. And when Tennessee won the SEC tournament, that didn't change Tennessee being a three and Kentucky being a two. I think Tennessee could have been a two. They even could have been a one with the way they played down the stretch, Paul. And Baylor, you know, Baylor's had injuries. They've got legitimate reasons for not being as good as they were last year when they were obviously great. But if you had made Tennessee a one and Baylor a two, you wouldn't have gotten an argument from me. But the committee doesn't do stuff like that. They stick to the numbers as much as they can because you can't really argue with numbers. And that gets back to my point about watching basketball and being able to see that North Carolina deserved to be in the tournament in 2000 in spite of their record, and being able to make decisions based on what's called the eye test. They can tell me all they want. Well, we watched 100 games. But if you don't know basketball, what difference does it make? One more other quick example I'll give you. I do America East games on television. I've seen Vermont play a lot. Vermont should have been at least an 11 seed. But nobody watches. Nobody on the committee watches America East basketball. I would be willing to bet if you had a member of the committee on your show, not one of them could name Vermont's five starters. Because nobody, you know, they're assigned to watch different conferences, and they get satellite TV so they can see all the games, paid for, of course, by the NCAA. But they don't know America East basketball. They don't know MAC basketball. They know the Big Ten, the ACC, the Southeast Conference, the Pac-12, maybe because they're on the West Coast, Big 12. That's pretty much all they know.
Taking all of this into consideration, and I'll spare you the prosaic who you got, but I am interested overall in your assessment of the field. And, you know, who are you keeping your eyes on the most?
Well, you know, every year, the TV guys all say, oh, it's more wide open than it's ever been. Well, last year it wasn't. Last year, Gonzaga and Baylor were clearly better than everybody, although UCLA almost pulled off the upset in the semifinals. And I think, frankly, wore Gonzaga out. And that was one of the reasons why the final was such a rout, not taking anything away from Baylor. But you play the late semifinal on Saturday, and it goes overtime, and you win at the buzzer. It's a little bit difficult to make that turnaround to face a great team, presumably, in a championship game. This year, there's nobody great. There's nobody great. But Gonzaga's still awfully good. They had two losses. They were both early. People say, well, their conference is weak and that hurts them. Well, they're 20-6 in the last six NCAA tournaments. They haven't won, but they've been to the final twice. They've been to the Elite Eight twice, and the other year they were in the Sweet 16. So that's a pretty good tournament record. I would bet it's the best one going for the last 5 years, although you say you win a championship, that's better than anybody. I'm just talking about overall record. And so I still like Gonzaga because they still have unfinished business, not having won a championship. I think Arizona is very talented, but we're going to see upsets early. I believe we're going to see upsets the first weekend. I wouldn't be shocked if Duke goes out early because as hard as Mike Krzyzewski is trying to make this a great finish, and I understand why he'd want that, why his players would want that, they can't play defense. You don't win championships if you can't play defense. Now, I will throw in just as a caveat there, I said a lot of those same things about the team in 2015, and they ended up going on to win. But they weren't under the pressure that this team is under because it's Krzyzewski's last team. But I think there are teams that are seeded, four, five, six, that can make deep runs in this tournament. It wouldn't shock me if none of the number ones got to the Final Four, but it would surprise me if Gonzaga didn't.
Always great conversation. John Feinstein, formerly of the Wall Street Journal, now currently contributing to the Washington Post. Would you have been contributing off and on to that paper for as long as I know you?
I've actually been with them, Paul, for 38 of the last 45 years. Is it 45? No, 44 years. Wow. I hate to admit it, but yeah, I've been with them for a long time. The only times I weren't with them was when I was with Sports Illustrated and when I was with the ill-fated National.
A lot of people got rich quickly on the National. John would have broken Watergate had he been old enough and had he been on the staff at the time.
And if I was as good as Bob Woodward, which I'm not.
But you're close. John, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for making time.
Paul, thanks for having me. I always appreciate it.
Always a joy to talk to John Feinstein, never sparing anyone. And that's why we love him so much. We'll take a short break. Back with much more.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we welcome all of you back. It's great to have you. And a little bit of an update here on the Feinbaum caller bracket. Squirrel running away with Homer. We are within moments of making a call there. Charles squashing cheerleader. Now I'm gonna retract that. That doesn't sound right. Larry and Handsome Joe in a battle royale. And Cat Daddy with a slight lead over Jeff from Ohio. Some updates coming up in a short. If you want to give us a call, you can do so now at 855-242-7285. And Matt is up next. Hello, Matt.
Hey, brother. How you doing, Mr. Paul Feinbaum,
Matt,
my friend?
By any chance, did you hear Legends call today?
No, I didn't hear it. I had to go to work, but apparently I wasn't on the schedule, so I was like, you guys suck.
Yeah, he decapitated you.
Oh, I'm so scared of Mr. Big Bad Legend, the one who's such a joke. He doesn't know guts. To call him when his team loses. Ooh, Legend, I'm so afraid of you. Ooh, I'm shaking. Nah, I'm not scared of him. Legend can go beep himself because I'm not scared of him, Paul. Like I said, I'm a proud Aggie, and I always will be a proud Aggie. And Legend, like I said, at least I got to get to call in. And by the way, you're still a decrepit old man. And Paul, I got one question I want to ask you, brother.
Yeah, you got it.
How do you think? My team players do you want to get an NFL draft this year?
Matt, you know, we got a long way to go before that. So I know A&M has a couple of really important players that are going to go very high. Thanks for the call, appreciate it. Dennis is in Oregon. Hello, Dennis.
Hey, Paul. I want to congratulate you on having Feinstein on.
Thank you.
You know, that's what most of your callers appreciate, getting insight and information that he gave on the selection committee. That was very, very good. And I appreciate it.
Yeah, I had never heard that before. I mean, I gave this committee too much credit the other day. Feinstein just leveled them.
Well, you know, let me backtrack a little bit. I criticize you for having people like Legend and Jim and Squirrel on. They come on too much, too often. And I don't know why you have them on, but it's your call. But I do like information like we get from Feinstein and some of your other callers.
I appreciate you saying that. First of all, we really like the callers here. I know everyone doesn't. We think it's something that every other show does not have. In fact, I'm rarely going to walk in here and be this boastful, but nobody has callers like our show. Nobody. I mean, every show has garden variety guests. We feel like we have unique guests, but sometimes it's hard to differentiate. Oh, there, I said it again. The guest, but try matching our callers. It's simply impossible. Thank you. Cheerleader is calling.
Hey, listen. Now, Charles can just say what he wants to me to say about me not being in the bracket.
Well, you're in the bracket, cheerleader.
Well, good, but I'm going to tell you how I'm going to move myself up. Do you know how well I can play basketball?
I've never given it one second thought.
Well, I shoot three-pointers is my, that's my star thing. And I shoot about 200 three-pointers.
Cheerleader, if I could interrupt for the brevity of time, we don't really care what kind of basketball player you are. This is what kind of caller you are to the show.
Well, then you just tell them I'm a good caller to the show and all my
friends. No, cheerleader, you don't tell people whether you're a good caller. You prove it every day.
Well, let's
prove it all night long, as Bruce Springsteen once said.
Well, I'm one of the few.
You are proving in this call why you're not advancing in the next round.
No, I'm not. I'm improving because I love the show better than anybody.
Well, now you're tugging at my heart by praising the show.
If you then mention
how attractive I am, you'll probably win the whole thing.
Well, I'm telling you what. Yes, you're attractive.
Thanks, cheerleader. I don't want to step on your call, but I will. Nicholas is up next. Hello, Nicholas.
Hey, Paul. I just wanted to ask you what you think of Mike White going to Georgia, and who do you think Florida should hire?
I think it's one of those rare moments when a coach leaves a school, and both schools profit from it. I think Georgia has a better coach than they could have probably come up with, and Florida has an opportunity to come in now with a game-changer coach, which Mike White wasn't. He was a good coach, and he can improve the Georgia program. But you know what? I could improve the Georgia program after Tom Crean, and I've never coached. Hey, thanks for the call. We're up against a break. More to come. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Hey, welcome back. It is great to have all of you here. And Hugh is up next in Deep Gap, North Carolina.
Hello, Paul. Been listening to a lot of the grousing about the committee. Man, I wouldn't be on that thing on a bed. I think those folks do a terrific job. What most of the people that aren't close to basketball have to understand is that the at-large candidates that are going to be placed is largely determined at the end of the regular season. And the folks that make that determination have a set of very meaningful metrics that includes team's power rating, the team's home and away record, but most important is the outside conference meaningful games. And to that end, that one Saturday where the SEC played the Big 12 and the Big 10 played the ACC probably went 80% of the way of setting up a route for most of the teams that were in the at-large bracket. Now, we all know that there was a huge number. I think only one of the better teams in the Southeastern Conference lost a home game. But the reality is the only conference that ever paid any real credence to the tournament, conference tournament, was Everett Case in the middle 50s that started it, because he had the only team there that could compete, and he wasn't getting a fair shake, and he created it so that it was a winner-take-all. And by the late 50s, when television picked it up, what it became was a moneymaker for the conferences. It hadn't got squat to do with the at-large bids, but it does have to do with the automatic seedings of the little guys and a tiebreaker in some cases. Paul, that's my story, honey, and I'm sticking to it.
Well said, Hugh. Thank you. So he's right. I mean, I remember a year many, many years ago, a team beat a team twice in the regular season and then had to have a playoff in order to go to the NCAA, because this was pre-conference tournaments, because the setup was convoluted. The conference tournament, there was one year, I think it was Maryland, won the regular season but lost in the ACC tournament in triple overtime, didn't go to the tournament, and that's when they finally opened up the field. If you go back to the early 70s, which I realize is another lifetime for many of you, not in Hugh's case or mine, but if you were a highly seeded team in the NCAA tournament, all you had to do was win two games, and you were in the Final Four. That was a 32, maybe a little bit more than a 32-team field, because you had a couple of play-in games for the lower-seeded conferences. Let's get back to the calls here. And Grandpa is in Texas.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing?
Grandpa, great to hear from you finally. It's been a long time.
Oh, yeah. I'm recovering from a bad case of bronchitis, so if I start coughing or lose my voice, feel free to cut me off.
You sound great.
But I was just wondering, does the selection committee not work weekends? Seems like they made their selections Friday in time to make happy hour.
Yeah, you know, I think Feinstein said that some of them leave early. I don't know about that, but there's a Calipari said this the other day. He disagrees with the SEC having the game on Sunday, but that's done for a lot of reasons, television being the main one. And I think people miss the point of this, and you understand it, I think, Grandpa. The committee looks at the body of work starting from November on. They don't just look at the last game.
Yeah, I think they should have their selection show on Monday to take into account the Sunday conference games.
Now, Grandpa, when you have the play-in games on Tuesday, you can't do that. So no matter when you do it, someone is going to complain. What we're really talking about, though, is and it's not the 68th best team or 69th, because that's not true. Texas A&M would have been probably an 11 or 12 seed. So we're talking about the top 48 schools in the country. Some would argue if you're not good enough to make the top 48, quit crying. In this case, Texas A&M got screwed. So there's not much getting around it. Mitch is up next in South Carolina.
Uncle Paul, how's it going?
Mitch.
I thought this little bracket thing would be a head-to-head.
Well,
verbal jousting at each other.
Well, that's to come. We're still in the first round, Mitch. So we really don't have time to do 32 runoffs. We'll get to some of that as we get a little bit deeper into the tournament.
You know who I'd like to hear go at each other?
Who's that?
Augie and Jeff from Columbus.
That could be good.
Jeff has questioned Augie's credentials. I've heard Augie question Jeff's knowledge sometimes. I think that would – we hear Jim, we hear everybody, like, legend. I want to hear somebody go at it that we haven't heard.
Well, that will come, Mitch. Who would you pick to win it all right now?
To win it all?
Yeah, I didn't mean to throw you a curveball there, Mitch.
Well, I mean, are they going to be verbal jousting?
Yes, I think so. As far as I'm concerned, Mitch, there can be real jousting.
Well, you can't understand Jim, and Legend's pretty fast on his feet.
Yeah, right so, now I would say the worst blood on the show, and that's saying something, is Jim and Legend. Wouldn't you think, are they in opposite divisions, guys, or not? Are they in the same division? I'm looking.
I would love
Jim and
to
Legend
hear
are
them
on the same
I've
side
never
right
heard
now.
Them go at each other.
Yeah, the new, but, I mean, the field is projected to have a Jim I-Man contest, but
Oh, God, that'd be boring as hell.
Jim and Legend would meet in the semifinals of the Final Four. We're coming right back.